friends, welcome once again to the Perfect Bound podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. This is episode 48 for January 11th, 2016. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Cole Hornaday.
Tell me about the rabbits, George.
That's an inside joke between Cole and I on a text conversation we had today. Nicole Lamb.
Everyone can enjoy it, clearly.
Exactly. A little of Mice and Men, and Chris Casso.
Hello.
All right. So before we begin, I know this is a podcast about comic books and everything comics related, but I just want to bring up today that we're in Seattle, and today one of the childhood heroes of mine was voted almost unanimously into the Baseball Hall of Fame. That is, of course, number 24, Ken Griffey Jr. of the Seattle Mariners and later of the Cincinnati Reds. But nobody remembers the Reds. So, yeah, I'll talk about that more on my baseball card podcast, which I call Card Talk.
Nice. Which,
are you going to tell them about your friend Cole's epic fail?
All right, so here's where George and Lenny come in.
And the rabbits. Don't forget the rabbits, George.
So, it was last week, Cole was like, I saw a bunch of baseball cards at Value Village, like one of the last remaining Value Villages in Seattle, and it's just a whole bag of Ken Griffey Jr. rookie cards for $6. Do you want me to buy them for you? And I'm like, heck yeah. Mm-hmm. And then one day I'm like, hey, Cole, I'm going to be up in that neighborhood. I'll just go and pop by. And he's like, oh, no, I'll do it. And I'm like, all right. So he goes to the store and he walks in and they literally put their hand in his face and they say,
sir, we're closing at 5. Well, it was New Year's. It was New Year's Eve, which is totally understandable.
Right.
So,
and then the next day,
I go back the next day.
So Cole looks online. He's like, okay, so this day I'm going, they close at 9. Mm-hmm. And then he shows up at like 6.
Mm-hmm.
And what do they say to you?
Sure, we're closing at 6. And I was like, you gotta be kidding me. I mean, I can't. And so they
so he's been thwarted. And I'm like, if there's a whole bag of Ken Griffey Jr. rookie cards, I got like stars in my eyes, you know.
In my eyes for Ben.
Is it like the 1989 Upper Deck Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card? It's like, worth, you know, Beckett says it's worth $40.
No.
So I text Cole. I'm like, hey, Cole, Griffey was just voted into the Hall of Fame today. Did you ever stop by Value Village and pick up those cards for me? And he sends me a picture, and they are, it's like 100 copies of the 1992 Topps Ken Griffey Senior card.
And whatever they are, they're not a knockoff, but they had to have been some premium from somewhere.
Legit.
Because there are scads of them. I mean,
so Cole texted me over text and asked if he asked George if he had done a good job.
Because I was you know, needing some confirmation that I was a good person, that I did the right thing.
He did a good
Cole
job.
Cole is a
Lenny.
Good hunter for the collector out there, for himself and his community.
You call me, but clearly I have a major fall down when it comes to baseball.
Well, kind of almost why I wanted to go by myself, because
you've just got a learning curve. That's all. We're the nerds that are that don't get the sports thing.
No.
So
send me a picture next time before you. Blow $6 on it.
Hey, dude, you are worth $6 and more to me.
Oh, that's awful sweet of you.
$8.
All right, do you guys ever check out the vintage stores for toys or comics?
Not often, but I did just go to one on Monday night and just, you know, a lot of boring stuff around there, and then all of a sudden there's like 4 short boxes. I'm like, what's this? There were some Jack Kirby Mr. Miracles and some Commandy, but nothing in great
shape. Where the heck were you?
I forget the name of the place. It's in the middle of Ballard. It's a big consignment place with like, it's like a TARDIS. There's like 5 levels that keep going.
That was a consignment place.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So it's more like an antique mall.
Kinda. Yeah.
I've never been there. But
it's newish.
Okay.
I don't comprehend time, so I don't know.
Or space.
Yeah, or space.
Linear beings comprehend time and space.
I come from a fifth dimensional world, so.
You sure did.
Yeah.
Speaking of the fifth dimension, let's go out to Philadelphia.
Wow. There was a band in the 70s that was called Fifth Dimension.
Yeah, the Fifth Dimension.
Maybe they were from Philadelphia. Maybe, well, I don't know.
Probably Motown, I think. But But, you know, Detroit, Philadelphia, whatever. Neither of these places I've been to. But in Philadelphia, a woman named Ariel R. Johnson has opened up a comic book / coffee shop that focuses on diversity.
Yes.
Now, this is a great story. Apparently, she's reportedly the East Coast first black female comic shop owner. Mm. The place is called Amalgam Comics and Coffee House. And it's in the up-and-coming Kensington part of town. I don't know what that means, up-and-coming. Maybe it was like...
It's like old Brooklyn or something, where it was just warehouses.
So it's
new developments happening.
Yeah, it's new
developments. It's like our Georgetown.
Exactly. It's like that kind of thing.
So, yeah, she says that one of her, like, when she was living in or going to Temple University, she would go to her comic book shop, buy comics, and then go next door and read her comics while having some coffee. And so she opened up this store and wants to focus on comics that, let me see if I can get the quote here.
It's all diversity,
yeah. Yeah, comics for anyone and everyone that loves comics, with women, people of color in the LGBTQ community. It's great. It's funny, too, because they show a picture of inside the place, and you can't really judge a comic book store by one picture, but it just looks like a cafe with one shelf of comics.
Wow.
Probably just the coffee house side.
Yeah, probably just the coffee house side.
I checked out her the Facebook page for it, and there's more pictures with better angles.
Good.
And but it's pretty fresh. Like, they're still working on the layout from what I could tell.
Uh-huh.
So there's room for more because, there's some big bare walls. I'm like, you could be putting shelves up there.
that's always Chris's spot. It's just sort of like, I could do something with that space. Do something.
So I'm unclear. Is it a borrowing library?
No, it's a comic store.
It is a comic
store. It's a full comic book store and coffee house. And she, besides the diversity, she said, you know, we're also going to have all the standbys like Superman, Batman, Captain America, and Thor. So, you know, still doing mainstream as well as having a huge focus on all of the stuff that's this new wave of comic book, you know.
Mm-hmm. And she wanted to focus on community. So an open place with not too many shelves in the middle makes a lot of sense, too, because she wants to have events there and book club meetings and all that.
Cool. Geeky and diversity-themed workshops, movie TV screenings, book signings, and BYOB nights, because she probably doesn't have her liquor license for a coffee shop.
Which is very smart to do, because the thing is, the current market and industry demands that comic stores try to evolve into something besides just a retail outlet, and community is like pretty much the number one way to go.
Yeah.
Totally. So,
now I can see it sort of being a double edged sword, seeing as how there's a big hangout space in the comic book shop. And I've never managed a comic book shop, but that's got to be a concern of hers where people don't buy comics.
Right.
They just come and read them.
Yeah. And I think some people have made distinct lines where it's like, this is the shop part and this is the coffee spot and like you have to purchase. But I don't know if she's going to do something like that, because then she is going to get a lot of, oh, I read that whole comic. Okay, I'm done. It's like a Barnes & Noble scenario.
Oh, and I spilled my coffee on it. Sorry about that.
that's a whole other concern, too. So, but I mean, as far as the positive aspects of it, I think that what she's doing is really like phenomenal.
I think
it's a like a dream come true in a lot of ways. Us at Comics Dungeon, we cultivate the community, and Jet Jaguar just fell down. That's been a big part for us. I mean, I met my husband here. We've made friends here, you know, like, so it's totally a community space. And so I think that where she's going with it is going to be successful. She's going to get those regular customers, and she's going to cultivate that. And I think it's going to bring a lot of positivity to the community, because I think she was also trying to shed some light in an area that may not be so great, too, is what I got from the article, but I don't know if that's accurate or not.
Area like the Kensington neighborhood?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I don't know if that's the case or not, or if she's just trying to liven that area up, you know, just with the comics, and I think that's a great approach.
It's probably where there was inexpensive square footage.
Yeah, exactly.
Did I dream this, or was there not, for a very brief time, a comic book coffee shop just down the street in the U District?
There was Comic Stop, and then there's the coffee shop next to it.
No, it's not what I'm thinking of. Different? There was one on the other corner, I thought, for a while. It might have been a tragic dream.
There was a straight up bookstore next to Sure Shot. Was that
I remember there even being like, you know, Superman's S in the window.
Oh.
Yeah, I think it was a dream.
No, I think there was something, but it was before I was really active enough to have known to check it out or anything. Oh, okay. So, but I think there may have been something. All right. But yeah,
but it's long gone now. Yeah. I wish, you know, there was that. If her shop was here, I would patronize that her place just for the coffee.
So, Chris, as a comic shop manager, does that make you sweat, or is that something that sounds like fun to you? Having
having food and stuff, or whatever.
Next door is a recreational pot store,
right? Yeah.
And so, if the owner of the Comics Engine and the owner of, I think it's American Mary is the name of the store, decided to join forces, you know, wow, with like a rotating door so not a lot of the smoke smell gets in here. Place like that, does that just keep you up at night?
A coffee place would appeal to me. Merging with food would be a whole nother thing. Like, there's down in Ballard, there's Card Kingdom, and next to that, Cafe Mox. And it's a great model they have because you can take the games from Card Kingdom, the open games, and play them and sample them while you're drinking your beer and all that at the other place. I am generally nervous about, you know, food around comics in the store. So, like, we'd have to figure something out. She's going to have to figure something out.
You'd have to have, sneeze hoods over all the shelves, right?
They're in those giant magazine protector sleeves that libraries have.
Big salad bar dome over the racks.
Because even without food in the picture, we have a lot of things destroyed on our shelves just from people not, you know, being careful and not telling us they destroyed them.
I saw that Facebook posting.
I found a $50 Saga hardcover, like, nearly ripped in half, and somebody just gently tucked it back in, hoping no one would find it.
How do you accidentally rip a hardcover book?
Probably dropped it.
It was probably a drop. There's interesting things that happen when you drop a book.
All right.
Yeah.
It's like when I dropped my cell phone last week.
Interesting things happen there, too.
All kinds of lovely fractures that happen. Yes.
All right. So The Guardian has an article about Wonder Woman getting back to her BDSM roots for 2016. Now, I thought this was an interesting article because it's basically the guy who wrote it, I think wrote it because on Goodreads somebody critiqued this comic. And basically he's like, well, Mary, or whatever her name was, this is why you're wrong. saying that, you know, Wonder Woman is this feminist, it goes against the iconography of feminism that Wonder Woman represents. Mm-hmm. But Grant Morrison and Yannick Paquette have a new Wonder Woman comic out, and apparently there's a lot more bondage than people maybe expected in this one.
I see confused look on figure. It's not out yet.
It's not out yet.
It's
okay.
It's almost out. Well, actually, it's like April-ish or something.
Remember, I'm the guy who, you know, was familiar with the background of William Moulton Marston. Marston. Thank you. Good job.
Good job.
Yeah, there you go.
And was familiar with that stuff. And yet, you know, what was it? Less than a year ago, I sat down and actually finally read the Wonder Woman Chronicles.
Yeah, and you reviewed them here. And
I was just kind of thrown out the window at the blatant BDSM found there.
Right.
And Chris's response was
yeah.
Clue phone ringing for you, Cole. You want to answer this? Yeah, I missed the, so yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think it just depends on how they're going to be portraying the BDSM, because a lot of media gets it completely wrong.
Right.
And it's just straight up like sadism towards women.
It's like 50 Shades of Grey versus
which is terrible.
Secretary.
Yeah.
And it doesn't
it's
sound like that's what this
versus
is.
Versus non-consent, yeah. Right. And so it depends on how it's portrayed. And I think that you could actually get some of the strongest feminist material out of a BDSM thing because it's dealing with different power plays and things. Mm-hmm. And having a woman who's already very strong. Mm-hmm. You know, so it can actually be.
We're dropping action figures. We got phones ringing.
It could potentially be successful. And, you know, as far as a woman being chained up in some skeevy pose, as Anne has said in this article.
Anne, that's her name.
Yeah. I think it depends. Again, skeevy poses, they depend.
I have a bit more faith in Grant Morrison
because the thing is,
I'm currently reading through his Super Gods novel, which is a very interesting examination of superheroes and comic book history and fiction in general and stuff like that. And he talks quite a bit about the origins of Wonder Woman and this kind of representation. So, like, the guy's done his homework, and he has an interesting way of looking at it, too.
Well, he's really enamored of the Silver Age.
And, yeah.
You know, and a lot of people are not. But he took, you know, he did that with his Batman stories and Batman Incorporated and that sort of thing. That's, you know, all drawn out of his love of the Silver Age. And I have to agree with him when he talks about, you know, the militarization of Batman and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the All-Star Superman, like, what he does is he goes back and he figures out what made the character tick in the first place, and then he tries to look at it in the current modern light. So it's just like, this could be very interesting.
It makes sense that going back to Wonder Woman's roots, you're going to get the BDSM, and he's going to
really do something with her backstory, because the Amazons were chained by Hercules, right, who is like an actual like villain in the DC universe. There's no redeeming him. As
he's
opposed
no
to the,
Kevin Sorbo.
Yeah. And he's not the Marvel one, well, who's just, is? You know, yeah. He's no Dwayne Johnson either, but
bingo.
Yeah.
So it's playing into all of that stuff.
Yeah. And so it's just like it's going to have multi layers working for it.
Because I really appreciate the gentler view of superheroes that he's trying to reincorporate into his storytelling, because the way he goes about it is that they're not silly and they're not dingy. It's just a kinder vision of reality than what we're getting from, say, Batman. Versus Superman.
Right.
Dawn of, what is it? Dawn
the
of
People
Justice.
Versus, oh. Yes. Yeah.
BVS:DOJ. I think Anne's problem here, and I'm sorry for piling on Anne, this reviewer who probably only knows Wonder Woman from the Linda Carter era.
Right.
But that's all I was going to say. She probably only knows Wonder Woman from the Linda Carter era, which I think is a lot of people today. Mm-hmm. That's how they associate. They've never read the Silver Age.
I'm actually amazed at Time Warner's just like, you go ahead, Grant Morrison, and bring it back all the bondage.
Yeah.
Because every other version of her we've seen in the past few decades has been fairly cleaned up. Yep. You know, a number of ways. The Azzarello did a run that kind of went back to like more warrior kind of aspect and all that. But in general, they avoid a lot of these. Actually, that's weird to say. Over-sexualization. Right. Mm-hmm. But they kind of still do. But they do the stupid TNA sexualization as opposed to an actual examination of sexualization.
Yeah.
Well, and the bondage stuff always kind of confused me because... you know, because I mentioned that in one of our episodes of The Panel Jumper, how, you know, DC, you always saw Wonder Woman chained on the cover. And, you know, Marston's viewpoint was that chaining of the woman of the Amazon is an act of empowerment, which I never could get my head around, because any other person buying it on, any other young man buying it on off the newsstand, they're being titillated for something else entirely.
Yeah, it's like subjugating.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I never really, I never understood. I was not drinking the man's Kool-Aid, and I never understood.
Yeah, and I think like the more you get successful BDSM stories, you see the strength in it.
Okay.
But it's just we don't get that. So you don't get that empowerment, or you don't get that feminism out of the stories.
And the good example of a healthy representation is
Sunstone.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the best one that I have in comic book form right now that I know of. So, I mean, that's, you know, this would be going in that path, in that direction of these positive representations. And I want to be sympathetic to Anne, because as a woman, seeing the TNA, seeing women be subjugated, seeing women be torn down and all these different things, like, we get fatigue. Mm-hmm. We get fatigue the moment we get out of bed, you know? So it's like, I totally get why she's just like, oh, I don't want to see this again, you know? Mm-hmm. And we have to evolve as well to see that there are people making new stories, that there are people making really powerful stories, and they're using things that have been taboo or maybe not done well. And we have to be open to them if we do want to have that sort of evolution in storytelling, you know, so.
Just a point of clarification, Chris, you're reading Morrison's Super Gods biography?
Yes.
Where he discusses his life in comics? And
yes.
Okay.
Yes, yes,
because
yes.
Because there's also the Avatar Super Gods book.
By Warren Ellis.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's a comic.
And they came out very close to one another.
Yes,
too.
Very close to each other.
That one's
It was Warren Ellis. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and I put this in the order today, Cole, because I know this is a favorite of yours. But Mike Mignola plans to end Hellboy in hell.
No,
now I think that just depends on how you read it.
It's the Hellboy in hell, right?
Well, I'm not
right.
sure why they turned it into a press release.
Yeah, so. I don't think because what source was that? Like comicbooks.com.
Comicbook.com, but they claim to have gotten it from Vulture.
Right. I just get the feeling that it's just like, well, yeah, he's just gonna take a break because he's already taken breaks.
Yeah.
You know, so like
he's gonna Hellboy. Paint apparently.
Well, that was interesting. Yeah. No, Hellboy, his Hellboy book, which is his and his alone, goes on lengthy hiatuses.
Yeah.
But he's always writing BPRD or Abe Sapien and the other books that fit into the Hellboy BPRD Mignola verse.
Mignola-verse.
I think we just coined a new term. Cole.
Actually, I don't think so.
No, I think that's I think that's on a couple websites.
Dang it!
So close.
I
want to trademark that.
It's not going to do us any good.
Well, if it's not trademarked, though.
But I would like them to, having been a supporter of Mike Mignola, a fan of Hellboy, and a person who has struggled through all of those books, you know, the Hell on Earth, BPRD, but I would really like to see a conclusion.
Right.
You know, it's like, let's end the world and do something new because you're just, I've reviewed those trades on the show. So
see, I would predict like after 2 years, we're going to get Hellboy in heaven. And then after two more years, Hellboy in Florida. And then it's just going to keep on going.
He's already been to hell, Chris.
Okay. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Just a side note that Ron Perlman, who plays Hellboy in the movies, is rumored to star in a Tom Waits biopic, which I
think. yes, please.
Yes.
Really?
But yes,
Ron Perlman's
please.
Like 6'2", and Tom Waits like
no, but they have like the same bone structure in their faces.
Have you seen kind their face? But look at their look
there
at
is an online game that's just like you hold up a picture and it's like, is it Waits or Perlman? Okay.
If they can make hobbitses small, they can make Ron Perlman's smaller.
Right.
Okay.
Waits size.
All right. All right.
All right, we'll just have to wait and see. All right, so the first episode of the Panel Jumper is called Muckman Mania, and we talked about Swamp Thing. And so Cole, a fella who claims to own the largest Swamp Thing collection under one roof, has contacted you, I believe. You want to talk about that
for
a second?
Well, I connected with John through Instagram, and he has...
John...
Boylan is his last name.
Okay.
And his website's called rootsoftheswampthing.com. And it is an exhaustive collection of Swamp Thing and Swamp Thing related memorabilia. It is truly impressive. I mean, friends and loved ones, you think I'm a little OCD? He has done a tremendous job, and he's earned himself a Guinness Book of World Records for holding the largest collection of Swamp Thing memorabilia.
That's pretty awesome.
It is pretty impressive. Yeah. And he's starting a fanzine, and he's invited me to write for it. And I have, and you know what my schedule is like. You know, I don't have time to brush my teeth, so I will do my ever best, John.
You want a breath mint?
To brush your teeth.
I've actually got, what do I have here? I've got Star Wars Galaxy sparkling jelly beans that I've been nibbling on.
Man, they'll put Star Wars on anything.
Is that General Grievous on the front? Oh, no.
No, it's a stormtrooper here. You want some of them taste like soap. Oh. You want to have one?
I like the sparkling aspect of it. Sparkling.
Tune in next week. We're going to talk about Star Wars.
My sister gave those to me for Christmas. Thank you,
all right,
Kendra.
So Roots of the Swamp
Roots of the Swamp Thing. And he and I are in discussion about what precisely I will be contributing to, how I'll be contributing to the fanzine. He's done a marvelous, marvelous job, and we were corresponding the other day, and he started, he has this massive collection, but he's now cataloging everything. You know, he's trying to, you know, keep
I appreciate a good spreadsheet. That's how I spent my vacation, is cataloging baseball cards.
How much time did you have off?
About a week and a half,
but
I had other responsibilities.
Yeah, okay, like what?
My parents' car broke down, so I had to drive them back home. There went my money. Anyway, we don't have to.
There goes that spreadsheet. Man.
Wow. There goes the garage
door.
No,
sorry, Mom and Dad. You're stranded at my sister's house because I got baseball cards to count.
And neener.
That's our son.
He spends a lot of his spare time cataloging all of this stuff. And what I really want to know is for myself, once I hit a point of completion with a collection, I start, you know, spreading out and reaching out to other things because I am so terribly obsessive at times about things. And I'm like, I am kind of curious of what John's going to do once he feels that he's reached a point of completion with Swamp Thing.
He moves over on the man thing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And then the muck, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the heap. And
yeah. All right. Good. Okay, John, we have your life all plotted out. So. Yeah.
He actually, it's kind of funny. He followed me on Twitter the other day. You too can follow me on Twitter at Ben Lawrence. And his Twitter handle is basically just Swamp Thing. So I opened up my Twitter app, like, Swamp Thing followed you. And I'm like, oh crap, he's going to find me.
Nice. Yes, but we'll keep you posted.
I've seen your panel jumper.
Do not bring your evil here.
Okay. Right.
Well, we'll keep you posted on John's Swamp Thing shenanigans as they progress.
Exactly. Stay tuned. All yes. right. And coming up here at the good old Comic Extension, we have Ladies Night. Nicole, you want to talk about that?
So we've started a Ladies Night in October of last year. So this is our fourth one? Math. Wow, oh my God, math. Okay. So this month is going to be Women of Sci-Fi. So we will have a whole spread of different comics to check out with different characters in the genre of sci-fi, and we'll have a discount of 20% off of those titles.
Mm-hmm.
We always provide coffee and donuts as well for free.
Oh, the coffee and donuts.
The coffee comes back.
Oh.
It's an epic night for us.
Please come
Chris
take the coffee from me.
With my coffee intake.
Is it still from Mighty O' Donuts?
Yeah, we get Mighty O' Donuts. Yeah. They're delicious little mini ones. And it's usually fun. It's just meet and greet. It's really casual, and we always have something monthly. Everyone's welcome.
So boys are welcome.
Boys are totally welcome. Oh, it's an inclusive event.
But don't be weird.
Yeah, we don't allow people to be weird.
Be a cool weird if you're going to be weird.
Yeah, so. Be cool, man. Be cool. And if you did want to have some sort of exclusive lady type event, we have started a ladies book club.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a lady type and you're interested, you can email me directly at nicole@comicsdungeon.com.
Awesome.
Yes.
NICOLE.
Oh, I actually didn't say when or anything
Gosh
about
darn
the event.
It.
What are the details, Nicole? Yes.
So it's January 16th. It's Saturday. And it's from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Did awesome. I forget anything?
That sounds good.
Here at the Comics Dungeon, and if you listen to the podcast, we will tell you the address.
Yeah.
Because Ben Lawrence has got it down pat.
An event page up on Facebook whenever we have these set up, so you can always double check that.
Yeah.
We also have on our event page on our website a sub-event header for Ladies Night events.
Exactly.
Yep.
Awesome. Excellent. Well, thank you. Let's move on to book report, everybody.
Yay,
let's start with Cole, since you're so happy about it.
I love book report.
It's my favorite time.
I love book report when I've actually read things I'm excited about. So, this week, I'm a little bit behind, but I read Grant Morrison and Dan Mora's Klaus. The first issue. I've read the first and second issue of their 6-part miniseries from Boom, devoted to what I like to call Santa Claus the Barbarian.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, going back to the kinder, gentler comic book world vision of Grant Morrison, this is. It's got a very much a Rankin and Bass style, you know, Santa Claus is coming to town plot where there's, you know, there's a kindly. We learn mystical woodsman who, you know, comes into this medieval type town in, you know, a fictitious part of Eastern Europe. And there's an evil overlord and he has an evil child and none of the children can have in the village can have in the, you know, enclosed village can have toys because the ruler's child gets all the toys. So Klaus, you know, I guess he goes into a mystical state.
He gets like magical alien pixies.
Yeah.
And they help him make toys.
Yeah. But it is very much like it's got this made for TV kind of family film, seasonal film feel about it. And the artwork is really terrific. And I'm thoroughly enjoying it.
It's like Santa Claus Year One.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They get like an origin story.
But the only reason I picked it up is that, you know, I, when I was younger, when I wanted to be a comic book writer, I wanted to write. a Santa Claus story. I want to write the definitive story from the Santa Claus myth. There was a book that that a gal wrote back in 1997 called Santa Claus, Last of the Wild Men. Her name was Phyllis Sidker, and she's also written pieces for 40 and Times, where she goes into the mythology of Santa Claus and his connection to the wild man myth and how it got reshaped by Coca-Cola and things like that. So, yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed the book.
I love Dan Moore's artwork.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with it, so I'm looking forward to reading the rest of the series, and this will be something that when it comes out in a trade, I will pick up next holiday season and probably give as a gift.
So. There you go.
Cool. All right, Chris, why don't you go next?
So I read,
because apparently Nicole is on the phone right now.
she emergency. I can't talk today. Emergency picked that up for us, so that's awesome. I've read the Wendy Project. It's a new series from a new publisher called Emmett Comics. Nicole's spoken about them before. And it's written by Melissa Jane Osborne with art and colors and lettering by Veronica Fish. And it's a beautiful book. Basically, it's designed to look like the journal of the main character. So the flow of the book kind of flips from a normal structured sequence comic to a little bit more dreamlike illustrated piece. And it's a modern day version of the Peter Pan story. And basically, this young girl, Wendy, was in a car with her two brothers. They crashed over a bridge, and a shadowy figure took one of the brothers. Mm. And the cops think that the kid's dead, and she's like, no, somebody, they flew up into the sky. Mm-hmm. And they all think she's crazy. So the journal is her therapy. Mm. And her other brother is mute. He won't talk after the event. So she's kind of flipping in and out. Like, there's this cop that she keeps seeing with an arm brace, and he might be Hook. He might not be Hook. Mm. And so it's kind of questionable, like, what levels of reality are happening here. So it's a very intriguing first issue, very well written, well scripted, and I really love the artwork by Veronica Fish.
So is the is the conceit that the journal is this Wendy is drawing the comic panels herself?
Yeah, as part of it. And the interesting thing is, like, she tries to get rid of the journal, and the journal keeps coming back.
Yep.
So the journal you're reading is this magical thing that she's reading. So you kind of get multi-levels of like meta comic happening.
My question is, are her brothers' names the same as the boys in Peter Pan?
John and Michael.
John and Michael?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it seems pretty sure, like, there is going to be a direct Pan event happening.
A Pan event?
Yeah.
Panoply.
So yeah, and it's worth mentioning, all the first issues of Emmett Comics are $4.99, which seemed pricey to me at first, but the level of quality you are getting is very high end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a chance to speak to the CEO and founder of Emmett Comics, and her commitment to the quality of the comics is so high that I really appreciate that. You don't always get that in a small publisher, especially right off the bat. You know, they have to kind of build to a certain standard, but they're just right off the bat coming out like that.
She's a theater person, is she not?
She is in animation. She's the
writer of this
writer
book.
The writer has quite a theatrical resume. It's pretty impressive.
Who's the writer?
The writer is Melissa Jane Osborne. And yeah, they credit that she's worked with Williamstown Theater Festival, the Samuel French Festival, NY Fringe, Playwrights Horizon Theater School, and Stella Adler Studio.
This gal's vetted, okay? Yeah.
And the Veronica Fish has been doing lots of work for Lego, Wired Magazine, the Girl Scouts of America, and more, so much more.
So these are the cool women you want to have at your party.
Oh, and Fish is also... the artist is also going to be taking over art duties on Archie soon.
Yep.
Yes. So, yeah.
So do you know, is this an ongoing or is it a limited?
Should be ongoing. Okay. Might be limited. Yeah.
So the right now, I'm not really sure how long running the stories are going to be. I just have an estimated schedule of maybe singles every quarter, maybe a trade every 6 months, something like that. Okay. They're kind of playing with their schedule right now. And I don't know if they're planning on doing like 6-issue arcs, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah. So cool. It's just kind of time will tell. They're so fresh, you know, they're still kind of figuring out their schedule.
All right. The Wendy Project. Nicole, what about you?
I'm in the process of reading The Secret Loves of Geek Girls.
That is a big book.
Yeah, and it actually has, like, real words in it. Like,
oh, gosh, like an actual book. That's full-blown text over there, for pity's sake.
Yeah. So anyway, it was a Kickstarter that we got into our store. It's edited by Hope Nicholson, and it's got a lot of different women who are in the industry. I mean, Trina Robbins, we all know she's a historian.
Yeah.
And
she
Marguerite
features
Bennett.
In episode 2 of The Panel Jumper.
Renee Nolte is an artist I really like. She makes mermaid drawings, but I don't think she does anything in comics.
Her name's familiar.
But yeah, I mean, there's and Hope Nicholson has her own thing in here. It's just a lot of women. So it's part prose, part comic book, and it's all about just women who have loved, who are also geeks, and it goes all over the place. Different relationship backgrounds, whether they're monogamous or not, whether they're queer or straight or in between or whatever, and it's all just a little anthology pieces. And it's just really fun, and you also get a lot of different age range too. So you'll get some young women, you'll get some older women, women who've been in long-term relationships. It's really exciting and fun. And I would say that pretty much all of the stories I've really enjoyed. And I would highly recommend it. We don't have many copies left in the store, and I don't know that we're going to be getting any more in. So, you know, come on in.
It's worth mentioning, too, that for such a super dense package, it's only $20.
That, guys, come on. Don't be crazy. Just get this thing already. All right? Anyone can appreciate this.
All right. Yeah. $20 U.S. or Canadian, which you don't often see that. All right. Well, that's Book Report, and that's our show. But before we go, of course, we'll play quiz time. Get your quiz hats on, everybody. This week, the questions, well, they come from me.
Yay, Ben!
And today, we're going to revisit an old topic, more Tinder profiles of superheroes.
I love this one!
All right, number one. I'm looking for someone who isn't intimidated by my strength, someone who can drink me under the table, and someone who isn't super controlling like my last boyfriend. Location, Hell's Kitchen. Super controlling.
Jessica Jones.
Yes, it is Jessica Jones. All right. Number two, I'm a badass stunt writer, but sleepovers are right out unless you're fireproof. Location, wherever there is evil. Chris.
Ghost Rider.
Yes, sir. Number three.
Is it Johnny Blaze or is it Dan Ketch?
Johnny Blaze. I was thinking of Johnny Blaze.
Johnny Blaze.
Okay. Actually, I was thinking of Nicholas Cage. All right. Number three. Most men are intimidated by my size and color, but what you should be intimidated by is my law degree. Everybody say it out loud.
She-Hulk.
Number four. I'm the boyfriend you deserve, but not the one you need right now. Chris.
Bruce Wayne, Batman.
Yes, sir. All right. Number five. I eat planets. Location, everywhere. Nicole.
Galactus.
That's quiz time, and that's our show. Thank you for joining us. You can find us every week at perfectboundpodcast.com. You can email us at perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. You can see that everything Cole and I do at thepaneljumper.com.
Maybe not for long. Cole's like bright red. He's about to die.
It's the best quiz ever.
I think Cole liked those. All right. And, You can like the Comics Dungeon on Facebook. Go to comicsdungeon.com or 319 Northeast 45th Street here in beautiful downtown Wallingford. And that's our show. We'll see you next week.